Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I don't like when I'm poked. I don't like when things are uncomfortable and I won't wear them. I'll throw them in the garbage and I'll never look back. But when I have something that is comfortable, like underwear from Skims or their bralettes, I love them and I will not throw them out. So thank you for not pinching me, Skims.
Absolutely. There's nothing worse than underwire pinching you or like just panties that are too tight. And nobody wants to feel, I don't ever want to feel my undergarments on
me. I don't want to think about them.
You know, I just, they're there and that's cool, but I don't want to feel them. And that's how I feel with Skims. I'm like, did I put on underwear? Yes, yeah. I did. But
they are
so comfortable that you don't even notice that you got them on.
My lightweight cotton ruched back hipsters from Skims. I thought these are going to bunch up. They're going to be weird. Not, couldn't be more comfortable again. And they're all cute and girly.
They are.
I was like, look at that. I could be adorable with a little bow on it. And I'm still not, something's not all dug in my craw.
Yeah, so again, my ass isn't hanging out of my cotton jersey full briefs, but they're got little lace on the bottoms and a little bow. And so I still feel cute and sexy in them. And they're beyond comfortable.
Knocking inside the walls, strange writings in blood, and a costume figure in the dark. Was it a spirit haunting this house, or something more terrifying? One family's greatest fear turned into another family's living nightmare, all at the hands of a young monster. This week's episode is Daniel LaPlante.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you. I can't control myself. I screamed so many times at Alamo Draft House.
Someone complained about you.
No one did. Actually, the people beside me.
What movie was this?
Okay, Paris and I went to go see Crawl, which is
That was the alligator movie I was trying to remember the name of
the
last
old
time.
Gator flick.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a better concept for an alligator. Well, it would have been a crocodile movie because they've recently found Nile crocodiles in the Everglades. And I believe that that would have been a scarier monster. This was just your average gators.
Was this a flush down the toilet pet that lived in the sewers and got loose?
Well, no, it's the trailer shows you, so I'm not giving anything away. There's a hurricane.
Oh, is that what it is? I saw flooding, yes.
Her dad lives by a gator farm, and so it floods, and so the gators are...
So they're just regular gators?
Yeah. There's just a bunch of them.
I guess that's more likely.
Well, there are Nile crocodiles.
Likely scenario, but
there were some unlikely things in the movie. I didn't know that gator injuries were just not that bad. They're superfluous. You're sort of like, surface. It's but a flesh wound.
Well, I guess it depends on where they get you.
But the directors, The Hills Have Eyes, got. Oh, this was the limbs. Solid limb injuries, and everyone seemed fine.
Somebody got their arm bit off, and it didn't. They didn't bat an eye.
It wasn't bitten off.
Would you,
they got chomped, and it didn't come off. I would think it would come off if you're a zoologist.
I think it probably could, but it also could just be. I mean, people get chomped by sharks and. Don't lose.
It was like
just
a head-on, like me going at a fudgesicle.
Like, oh, so that's getting destroyed.
Yeah, you'd think. Anyhow, there were some unbelievable bits, but there were some jump scares, which I think you know how I react to jump scares.
I do, after La Llorona.
Oh my gosh. I was.
Or just walking down the street.
Yeah, down the hallway, around a corner. That's me.
Yeah.
And the people next to us, the lady would go, "They're around the corner. She should turn around. There is an alligator."
So she was talking?
Full out loud whispering.
Well, she should have been kicked out.
Thank you. I was just screaming. And I also repeatedly said, if they kill the dog, I'm going to walk out. You can stay if you want to. And he said, no, I'll go with you. It's fine. And then the family in front of us was outright hollering. It was a free for all. I've never
This is the worst Alamo management I've ever heard of.
I was shocked. I was myself participating in the bad behavior, so I didn't want to be a snitch. So
I would have had all three of y'all, all three couples kicked out of this movie theater.
In front of us was like a mom, a dad, and two kids. It was like a free for all.
I can't believe they allowed this.
It was nuts. And it's like at the flagship, like the big Alamo Cedars in downtown Dallas. I don't know. But if everyone's like, it's so bad, it's good. That movie was very well directed. It just was like, I didn't care about anyone. And I wanted to all get eat by gators.
Well, that's one way to go about
it. Like, you know what? There's no stakes for me because you just eat her. I don't care.
They didn't. That's how I felt about La Llorona. I didn't care about any of the characters. None of them were sympathetic figures, so I didn't give a shit what happened to any of them, including the children, which says a lot about me.
There's an injured old man, and I was just like, you know what? Take him, Lord.
He's lived a good life.
He's been fine.
Let the gators get him.
He basically was like, leave me, so... It's her dad.
Well, I'll probably wait for that one to come out.
Yeah,
on
it's a Netflixer.
Netflix.
It's a
That's
Netflixer.
A Netflixer.
Yeah, it's all right. I just wanted to tell you the screaming in the Alamo.
Did they have? Oh, you know what? I was also at the Alamo this weekend.
Oh no!
But the real Alamo.
What?
In San Antonio.
Are you allowed to talk in the real Alamo?
We did not go into the actual
Alamo
because the line was very long.
Did you go in the gift shop?
Very hot. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Got Ella a, you know those, it's a horse head with a stick and you ride it around.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking
about? Like a
little
pony.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say a rubber horse mask. Hilarious. Please get her
one. Well, she did not find this gift hilarious.
She didn't like it.
We didn't think it through that we are handing her a horse head with no body. And she took one look at it and started crying and wanted to be picked up. And I was like, what's scary about this? Oh, it has no body.
What happened to the rest of this
exactly.
horse?
Exactly.
So, you're a smart kid.
Well, I know. We've put it away and hopefully over time
she'll get older.
She'll get it. Yeah. But we were at the Alamo and then we walked around the Riverwalk. And
I love the Riverwalk.
It was fun. It was nice.
There's a root beer place across the street from the Alamo. Did you go there?
No, but Tommy had a root beer at the restaurant we went to.
Oh, very nice. There's like a local place that makes root beers, and they sell them in like frosted mugs across from the Alamo.
There, across from the Alamo, was Ripley's Haunted Tour.
You didn't go on that.
I did not. I went up, and I was like, babe, do you want to do this? It was $23 a person. And I go, what is this to the lady? She goes, it's a walk-through haunted house. And I peered inside, and it was just droves of people in the broad daylight looking at things. I was like, this can't be haunted.
We're
worth $23. So we just walked around and I got a giant margarita with a Dos Equis dumped inside of it.
Hell yeah.
It was very good.
That's how you forget the Alamo.
Exactly.
But you didn't go in the basement?
There is no basement, Heather.
Where is Pee-wee's bicycle?
Wasn't it at that mean guy's house the whole time?
When I was a kid, besides the leprechaun, before the leprechaun ever traumatized me, Francis from Pee-wee's Big Adventure scared the bejesus out of me.
You know what scared me from that movie?
When he's in the big giant bathtub going, man.
Oh, that. Well, it scares me when he's driving down the road and there are all those cartoon kind of claymation animals.
Yeah.
And when he's having the nightmare.
Yes.
And the clowns are driving around in the ambulance.
It's a fucked up movie.
That movie,
it's Tim Burton.
I recently, talked about how fucked up that movie is.
I loved
for
it.
For kids.
I loved Pee-wee.
How dark
as a kid.
It was.
I loved it. Pee-wee doll in my
I know.
Living room.
Tell him large, Marge, Cynthia. That still makes me laugh if I see that scene. It's a great movie.
Oh, man. What a weekend we've had. And then in the middle of it,
we were both at the Alamo.
In different ways.
And
meanwhile, we were both researching this horrifying case.
Oh, gosh. I was researching this the other night in the dark with my laptop, and out of nowhere, a mosquito hawk dive-bombed my laptop screen, and it scared the shit out of me.
A hawk got
I lost several years off my life.
gasped.
Is mosquito hawk a southern thing? Do people know what mosquito hawks are?
I don't.
It is not a giant mosquito.
It's not a bird.
It's a hawk. It is not a, yes, it's not a hawk that's a mosquito.
I think it's probably in the south. We call them skeeter eaters.
So I call them mosquito hawks.
I've never heard mosquito hawk, but I knew when you said that, I assumed it was a skeeter eater.
Okay. Yeah, they look like giant mayflies. Maybe some people call them mayflies.
Yeah, I think so. They're long, skinny body, long, spindly legs and wings and flies.
Yeah,
they live like 24 hours.
They're just a nuisance.
Most time you find them dead.
Yeah.
Do they really eat mosquitoes?
I think they do.
Skeeter eaters.
Skeeter eaters, mosquito hawks.
Skeeter eater is also a mean name that I got in high school.
You were called that? That does sound like a bully name, though.
The Mesquite High School, not my high school, but.
Oh, because you went to Mesquite. That's right.
Well, yeah. I went to a different high school. I went to John Horn High School, Mesquite, Jacks for Life. But Mesquite High School's mascot, Mesquite Skeeters.
The Mesquite Skeeters?
That is their, and their mascot's a mosquito.
Did anyone ever call them the Skeet Skeets?
All the time.
That's a better burn.
We would scream, aw, skeet, 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 yeah, skeet at them after that song came out. So much like Michael Bolton's name was fine until he was 12 years old and the No Talent Ass Clown came around, the Mesquite Skeeters was a fine, noble mascot until Lil Jon and the East Side Boys came out and they're like, aw, skeet, 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 skeet. Now
that's the best thing that could have happened to that school. You know, put them on the map.
They got to change the name.
I was a Yellow Jacket.
Okay. We were the Jaguars. We got to vote off.
I don't know. I don't know. I didn't go to many of the football games.
Not really like a
people
rivalry.
Yelled it. Our rivalry was I believe it was a high school called Pascal. I want to say they were some type of a cat.
That makes
like
sense.
Like a panther, like maybe? A
Pascal panther?
Something.
I could hear that.
I don't know.
But we didn't have a rivalry because our school was so new and the other schools had sort of established their rivalry.
Yeah.
And we would be like, do you want to fight? And they're like, no, we don't.
So
go
y'all
away.
Didn't have any rivalries?
No, eventually I think because we were a lower rank in football because we were like smaller and yada yada. Anyhow, so I think we eventually got a rival. But
wow.
For
that's
the longest.
When you turn on each other when they don't give you someone
exactly
else to turn on.
We created two mini schools inside the school. No.
Just East Egg, West Egg up in there.
You like
very
that? Good
you
reference.
Like that reference? Thank you
very
so
good reference.
Much. You know what else was inside the walls?
Oh, God.
Was that a segue?
It was a good segue.
Of.
I'm into it.
It's a little bit of a segue.
I appreciate it.
This crazy, bizarre, tragic story we will be talking about today.
This is one that on first blush, you think, what a weird, wacky little deal. And then you get into it and you think, oh, Jesus Christ.
It took a turn I was not expecting.
More horrifying than I could have imagined.
Yes, for sure. And we're going to get into it. It is Daniel LaPlante. Some people also refer to part of this story as the Andrews family haunting.
Yes.
I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
So let's just jump right in. In late 1986, a Townsend, Massachusetts teenager, Annie Andrews, received an interesting phone call. It was a young man who claimed to be a teen from another school. He said he had seen Annie and asked for her number from a friend because he found her so attractive.
This again, when much like you said, if someone called you and said you won something, you wouldn't believe it. If someone called me and was like, I saw you and I thought you were really hot, I'd be like, who? Like Seinfeld, who is this?
Who is this?
I actually said that in the movie out loud. We were really on a roll because she called someone for help and she was screaming and they couldn't hear her. And I just went, who is this?
I cannot believe the Alamo employees did not
it
do
was a free for all.
This.
It wow. was a free for all. Anyhow, but I think I would be incredulous as a teen girl.
Well, I would also be
ooged out.
Yeah, and I guess this was back before people could readily had your phone number, but it would weird me out to know that like somebody just got my phone number
and like asked.
Yeah,
and also this is days before DMs. So now you would slide into the DMs.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So I would feel uncomfortable, but maybe it was a simpler time.
The '80s, yes, they were in some regards. Well, after talking on the phone for several weeks, she agreed to go on a date with the boy, having felt flattered by his comments. However, when the boy arrived to meet Annie, he was nothing like he described.
The original catfish.
Mm-hmm. Over the phone, the boy had told Annie he was a blonde athlete. Standing before Annie was instead a lanky brunette with a pockmarked face and greasy hair. Annie went on the date to be polite, but after an hour made an excuse to get back home and afterwards stopped returning the boy's phone calls.
As was her right.
You know what? Very much so. I wouldn't have gone on the date at all.
No. got catfished.
And maybe that's shitty of me.
Well, I wouldn't go, not because it wasn't a hot athlete, but I would think, oh, this person's a liar.
Yeah.
What else have they lied about?
I would be very uncomfortable that I had been completely taken.
Yes.
And I'm like, this guy just completely lied to my face. We're not going to address this.
Yeah. I would be more.
He said he was somebody totally different.
Exactly. Just concerned that it was, he was an untruth. Yes. A liar.
Yes, exactly. Annie was not necessarily in the mood to date anyway. She was still mourning the loss of her mother earlier in the year after a long battle with cancer. She and her sister Jessica were, in fact, so grief-stricken by the loss that one evening they decided to perform a séance in hopes of making contact with their deceased mother's spirit.
That's pretty sad.
Very sad.
That they miss her so bad.
And they're both teenage years, 13 to 15. That is your formative years when losing your mother is just devastating. Losing any parent, but especially for two young girls who lose their mother is just, you would do anything to have some more contact with her, including performing a séance.
Opening a realm to the other side.
Exactly. While performing the séance, their father, Brian, came home and found his daughters in the basement with crystals, chanting in an attempt to make contact. He told the kids it was time for bed and took them upstairs. Later that night, as Annie and Jessica were trying to go to sleep, they got hopeful. They heard a light knocking on their walls. Wondering if they had actually made contact with their mother, the girls spoke to the spirit. To their surprise, the walls began knocking back in response.
Most of the time, that's so scary.
Yes.
But in this case, they were hopeful. However,
it would probably feel comforting.
Yeah, you're excited because, is that you, Mom? Knock twice. Yes. Yes, and it knocks twice.
You're like, oh, she's here with us.
Well, I would assume, because I study the demonologists and psychics, Ed and Lorraine Warren, power couple, that a spirit would try to take on the form of the thing that you want it to take on,
mm-hmm.
so that it would trick you into letting it in. And I'm just a cynical person who would not believe a ghost.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for that.
That you just are told, I'm just a little girl.
Do you think
at that age
you would have thought that? Now looking back, maybe. But as a 13-year-old that just lost her mother, is that going to be your first thought?
Well, it's the 80s, so they didn't have the benefit of the internet that I did. I got obsessed with Ed and Lorraine Warren probably when I was like 17. So
okay, this is pre-cynical demon before
I studied in the I was 17 when I got into them, because I remember I found their website, was reading their website, and then I got,
which to this day has not been updated.
It's exactly the same.
It's the exact same website.
It may be more animated in GeoCities like, but mm-hmm. I got the book, The Conjuring, it's called The Haunted. The Haunting, I think.
The Haunting, yes.
About the Smurl family.
Yes.
And I read that in one night, cover to cover.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You talk about that in The Smurl Family Haunting.
It scared me so bad.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I don't like when I'm poked. I don't like when things are uncomfortable, and I won't wear them. I'll throw them in the garbage and I'll never look back. But when I have something that is comfortable, like underwear from Skims or their bralettes, I love them and I will not throw them out. So thank you for not pinching me, Skims.
Absolutely. There's nothing worse than underwire pinching you, or like just panties that are too tight. And nobody wants to feel, I don't ever want to feel my undergarments on.
I don't want to think about them.
You know, I just, they're there and that's cool, but I don't want to feel them. And that's how I feel with Skims. I'm like, did I put on underwear? Yes, yeah. I did.
But I gotta double check.
They are so comfortable that you don't even notice that you got them on.
my lightweight cotton ruched back hipsters from Skims. I thought these are going to bunch up. They're going to be weird. Not couldn't be more comfortable again. And they're all cute and girly.
They are.
I was like, look at that. I could be adorable with a little bow on it. And I'm still not, something's not all dug in my craw.
Yeah,
so again,
my ass
thanks.
Sitting hanging out of my cotton jersey full briefs, but they're got little lace on the bottoms and a little bow. And so I still feel cute and sexy in them. And they're beyond comfortable.
Well, as the days passed, the haunting intensified. Rather than the previously gentle knocking on the walls, the girls were now hearing loud banging. Items began to go missing from the home as well. Soon the sisters feared that it was not their mother or a friendly spirit, but a demon they had mistakenly conjured from the other side.
Yeah, when it starts to take a turn, that's when you think,
yeah,
oh,
you're
God,
terrified.
We've done something.
Their father was not convinced there was a ghost at all. A skeptic, Brian dismissed the children's complaint of knocking in the walls, even though they pointed to their seance as the start of their troubles. Brian told them to forget all about it, as ghosts weren't real and the house was definitely not haunted.
It's all reasonable responses from a parent.
Yeah, and I think it's reasonable responses from these girls because they're thinking, well, what's the one outlying factor here? Oh, we performed a seance. Now shit's going crazy. Of course, we're the ones that caused this. That's
the
only logical explanation.
Absolutely. That was when it started.
But the apparent haunting wouldn't stop. For months after the seance, Annie and Jessica were plagued with noises and scares. Personal items had also gone missing, and furniture around the house seemed to be out of place ever so slightly.
It's like a gaslighting ghost trying to trick
you. Absolutely is, yes. One evening, while Brian was away at work, there was a particularly loud bout of banging. Annie grabbed a kitchen knife and headed to the basement from where it sounded like the thumps were coming.
So if you're a kid, first of all, this sounds like my sister. 1,000%. She'd go.
She'd get a kitchen knife.
Let's go get it. You know
I
what?
I would have said.
Ghost.
Bye.
Just
and
leave.
Left the house.
No,
100%.
Shannon was bold. And she to this day is bold. And would just go, no, we're not. She was the one that, speaking of talking in the movie theaters, I told you, watch the movie Dark Water. And they were behind us talking. And she just turned around and made eye contact and said, oh. It just seemed like your conversation was more interesting than the movie. Go on. Finish what you were saying.
And did they stop?
It was this huge, giant guy. And he was like, I'm good. She's like, no, finish. And he was like, I just wanted to say da-da-da, whatever to the girl. And she's like, okay. And then turned around. I was like, gosh, she's so cool. She would 100% attack a ghost with a knife.
She needed to be in that crawl movie.
Yeah, she was brave as hell. She would have stabbed that alligator right in the face right at the beginning. You know, there's nothing that, like, as a kid I was like, there's nothing braver than my sister. Like, she's
aww,
the strongest thing.
That's so sweet. Well, together Annie and Jessica crept down the stairs, but once they flipped the light on at the bottom, they saw that the basement was empty. Relieved and disappointed, they headed back up to the living room, but quickly stopped dead in their tracks. There, scrawled on the wall in blood, was a message that read,
I am in your room. Come find me.
Okay, now I would lose my mind.
Little Heather would have been like, I just pooped.
Yes. Little Christy would have probably just
run
had a heart attack, had a baby heart attack, and that would have been the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whew.
That's so scary.
Well, terrified of what might be waiting for them upstairs, the sisters fled from the house to a neighbor's home to call the police. Their father was notified as well and rushed home from work.
Poor guy.
I also would think, this isn't a ghost. This is a crazy person in my house. So that's why I would be even more shitting my pants.
True. Because it's not, it's at this point, it's physical.
Yes.
Yeah, it's in the physical.
That I'm going to have to encounter. And it's a real deal now. Upon seeing the message, Brian discovered it was written in ketchup and became angry with the children for playing such a cruel trick and put them to bed with a lecture. He also suspected that they were using this ghost business to deal with the grief from losing their mother, so he found a therapist to counsel them.
How do you think he figured out it was ketchup?
I think he went up to it.
And
he had to have licked it. Maybe he smelled it.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe he was like, this isn't blood.
He's like, look at
drug
how gooey it is.
It. Yeah. I mean, ketchup has a pretty pungent smell.
Yeah, you can, and I think you can, if you're a little kid and you're scared and you're running past it, you maybe don't notice, but I think blood's probably thinner and ketchup's more of like a goo gel-like thing.
And he obviously thought it was his kids already, so he probably was like, how did they do this?
Have you ever seen the movie Fierce Creatures?
Fierce Creatures. I don't think
it's a sort of a sequel to A Fish Called Wanda. It has John Cleese and Jamie.
I have seen A Fish Called Wanda.
So it's the same cast. It's John Cleese, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Kevin Klein.
Yes.
And they, Jamie Lee Curtis and Kevin Klein work for this like conglomerate that owns all these companies, and they decide that they're going to buy this zoo in England. Oh. And John Cleese runs the zoo.
Okay.
And they figure out the way to drive up profit is to make all the animals seem very deadly. And so it's like an anteater, but there's like videos of people screaming and running.
That's funny.
And it's like the most dangerous animal. And so John Cleese is assuming that this is all put on. Well, a lady really does fall and scrape herself, but John Cleese says, this is ridiculous. It's all just part of the act. And you know how he talks, and he's very like haughty, and he grabs her arm and he starts licking the blood, and they're like, he's sucking her blood. And they're like, he's running amok. It's such a good movie. And Kevin Klein plays himself and his own dad, who's Australian.
Oh, that's very funny.
And he's like doing this Australian accent. He's like, mother always said, when you're naughty, you gotta go to the shed. And it's one of my favorite phrases. And I'll say it.
I've never heard you say it.
Sometimes I'll say it and I'll be like, if you've been naughty, you gotta go to the shed. And nobody knows what movie that's from.
No,
DM me. If you love Fierce Creatures, please DM me. It's so good. I wore that VHS tape out. I recorded it.
I'm gonna have to watch it.
Oh, it's so funny.
Wonder if it holds up.
Highly recommend. But that's one way to know if it's ketchup. It's just
to lick it. Maybe that's what he did.
But I think he did the right thing putting them in counseling.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yes. They probably should have already been in. Yeah, but at least tough. Better late than never.
Exactly.
Well, 2 weeks went by and it seemed like Brian's plan was working. As his children learned to cope with their grief in a healthy way, the ghost appearances subsided. That is until one day when Annie and Jessica were home alone while Brian was again at work. Suddenly the ghost was back and once again making loud banging noises upstairs.
God, that's the worst when you think, oh, we're safe. It's finally over. And then it ramps back up. Somehow it makes it worse than just a steady.
It was safe.
Just like every movie trailer.
Every horror movie trailer ever. Yes.
Well, again, Annie took a knife from the kitchen, preparing for a confrontation.
As the teenage girls approached the bedroom, they saw another blood red message scrawled on the wall that said,
I'm back. Find me if you can.
So these girls know it's not them.
Correct.
The dad thinks it is them. But you're these two teenage girls, and all you're trying to do is convince your parent, we have nothing to do with this.
I'm serious. This is a serious thing.
Yeah, imagine how defeating and frustrating that is.
And makes you feel like he doesn't trust you or he doesn't believe you. And also, it's all happening frequently when they're, and because it's a single dad, he's got to work to support them. Frequently happening while their dad is away. Yeah. So you're feeling
when
vulnerable.
When they're at their most vulnerable.
Alone. Yeah.
This makes you even more sad that you don't have your mom to go to help you. Well, Annie and Jessica fled the home once more and again headed to a neighbor's house to call their dad. Brian headed home begrudgingly, sure he would find more pranks by his kids. As Brian and his daughters stood on their porch, they heard all the TVs in the house, apparently turned on and at full volume. The girls confirmed they had not left them that way. Now even more curious, Brian turned the doorknob and headed inside. Since the kids said the noises and messages were upstairs, that's where he went.
As a brave dad. But you know what? As a parent, you got to do it.
I mean,
you're bumping the night duty.
I'd do it. I would, for Ella, I would do it. Actually, I think, honestly, if I showed up and all the TVs were on in the house, I would get my girls and leave and go call the cops because I would assume an intruder was in the home.
Yeah, that's true.
I would not go in after them.
It's the two explanations, you can't solve either of them. You know, if explanation one, if it's a ghost, you can't fix that.
Right.
And if it's an intruder, you shouldn't try to fix that.
Do you want to confront that?
Yeah.
No, go get the police on the phone.
Call the cops. Yeah, that's a good point. But I mean, hey, he did what he thought was right.
Well, in some versions of the story, Brian headed upstairs to find another message on the wall. This one said,
marry me.
Confused by the message, he only barely noticed the figure standing in the corner of the room. It was a teenage boy wearing Brian's deceased wife's clothes and a blonde wig, his face smeared with makeup. In his hand, a wood chopping hatchet. Brian, Annie, and Jessica managed to escape the house and call the police. They then decided to stay with family for a few days. Well, yeah, I don't think I'd go back.
Burn the house down.
Burn the entire house down.
Your things are gone. It's been nice. You can start over. Start fresh.
What a shocking and unexpected sight.
I mean, it's good that they ran out. I guess he had a hatchet. And he maybe was a lanky, so he's a little bit taller. I was thinking if I saw a kid dressed up trying to taunt me, I'd punch him in the face. But
Got a weapon and he's probably wielding it in a crazy
and
manner.
And he's wearing your dead spouse's clothes.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like, this person is clearly unhinged. I'm not about. And you've got your kids with you.
Yeah.
It's I would immediately
when Michael Bluth goes to the attic and finds George Sr. in the wife's maternity clothes.
That's, that season's so good. Yeah.
And he lives in the attic. But yeah,
so,
it's a start.
This is one version.
Correct. This is where the story splits.
Yeah. So because this story has been told a lot and picked up by the media, a lot of people assume some things have been embellished or maybe twisted a bit for the sake of sensationalism. But enough of the story has been confirmed.
Correct.
That it did really happen. There's just, this is where things, there's two different kind of variations.
It's sort of, it's an actual event that there were charges filed. It was recorded in the, by the AP in the news.
Yes.
But the further details weren't, they didn't come to light. So people sort of filled in.
Yes, like this. Exactly. Yes. Well, when police searched the house, they found no one. As they continued searching, Brian and his children felt safe enough to return. When they pulled into their driveway, however, they were horrified to find the same teenage boy who had wielded the hatchet now standing in their living room window.
Staring at them.
That's very psycho-esque.
That's freaky. Also, how long were you standing there?
He's just waiting for them to come back. Yeah. So maybe that's why it's not quite as believable.
True.
There's some holes in this.
I believe this second version of the story is the one that was reported on in the old-timey news. You guys, I looked at old-timey newspapers for this story. And
old-timey newspapers.
I was on the microfiche machine, but I give you all the credit because I'll just say a thing and you're like, you need to find sources for this. You're like, what does this even mean in your notes? And then I'm like, okay, here's the newspaper article. But it was really fun to like, not fun.
Old-timey,
you know,
newspapers are fun.
It was interesting to go and read the actual, especially reading so many variations on the urban legend, reading the details that were reported in the local paper at the time.
Yeah. Yes, local papers are always very interesting.
I only get my news from the National Enquirer and the Mesquite Star.
Well, that is quite a worldview you have. Well, in other versions of the story, and the one that is much more likely, Annie was in her room and opened her closet to find a teenage boy dressed as a Native American with his face painted and a hatchet in his hand. He tied her up, then brought each family member to the room, tied them up, and left to ransack the house in search of valuables. So even though this is probably what happened, how insane. You're a teenage girl. You're just in your room.
Chilling.
Hanging out. Already alarmed by all the shit that's going down. Then you just open your closet maybe to get out a cardigan. I don't know.
Here it comes.
Look at your teen beat. And then there's just a boy standing there in makeup with a freaking hatchet.
It's horrifying.
You don't get over that.
And these details were the ones that were published in the newspaper that he was wearing Native American regalia, kind of.
Where did
garb.
He get that?
Great question. He probably stole it from somewhere. He's a bit of a thief, we'll learn. But yeah,
maybe they had a costume section in their house.
Yeah.
Like a dress up thing.
I got a whole bag of costumes.
I've got a lot of costumes too.
Oh man.
I always think I should get rid of them and then I think, no, I'm going to need these.
It's
one
great.
Day.
It's so great.
I mean, and I have for sketches many times used them. So.
Yeah. And just having for, you know, parties you go to or your friends go, hey, do you have a whatever kind of costume? Oh, I think I have a Sherlock Holmes
there
costume.
Was one birthday party where all of a sudden Tommy disappeared and he came back dressed as a sock monkey.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And then he just stayed as a sock monkey the rest of the
night. I'm just feeling it. I just want to be a sock monkey right now.
Well, Annie managed to escape her binds and untie her sister and dad. The three then fled the house and called the police. When authorities arrived, there was no sign of the boy that had threatened Annie and her family.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money. But nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features.
Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I don't like when I'm poked. I don't like when things are uncomfortable and I won't wear them. I'll throw them in the garbage and I'll never look back. But when I have something that is comfortable, like underwear from Skims or their bralettes, I love them and I will not throw them out. So thank you for not pinching me, Skims.
Absolutely. There's nothing worse than underwire pinching you or like just panties that are too tight. And nobody wants to feel, I don't ever want to feel my undergarments on
I don't want to think about them.
You know, I just, they're there and that's cool, but I don't want to feel them. And that's how I feel with Skims. I'm like, did I put on underwear? Yes, yeah. I did.
But I gotta double
they
check.
Are so comfortable that you don't even notice that you got them on.
My lightweight cotton ruched back hipsters from Skims. I thought these are going to bunch up. They're going to be weird. Not couldn't be more comfortable again. And they're all cute and girly.
They are.
I was like, look at that. I could be adorable with a little bow on it. And I'm still not. Something's not all dug in my craw.
Yeah,
so, again,
my ass
thanks.
Isn't hanging out of my cotton jersey full briefs. But they're got little lace on the bottoms and a nice. Little bow. And so I still feel cute and sexy in them. And they're beyond comfortable.
Well, in both versions, the boy was nowhere to be found when police searched the house. However, in the basement, the source of much of the noise, the police found something interesting. Behind the washing machine, a particularly astute officer noticed something, a small hole with some garbage inside of it. When they looked further, police found candy wrappers, soda and beer cans, and other indications that someone had been living inside the family's walls.
Ah.
Amidst all this trash was the most shocking discovery of all. The boy who had taken Annie on a date all those months ago. His name was Daniel LaPlante.
And he is living in their walls.
My
And tormenting God. Them.
Police also discovered a series of tunnels that Danny had managed to create within the walls in order to give him access to other areas of the house. Strategically placed peepholes were also found that Danny had made, allowing him to spy on Annie from any location.
That's so unnerving.
You would question every single thing you had done for the past however long he's been there.
Like 4 or 5 months at this room, point. Being alone and having alone time in your room.
Yeah.
Taking a shower. Anything,
dressing
up.
Just doing any of your normal mundane stuff.
Talking on the phone.
Filtered through the eyes of someone else, though.
When you're just hanging out reading your team beat.
Yes.
You got a poot and you just let it go.
All of that.
You think you're alone. You think you're not. And then there, now you know someone is listening the whole time.
Man.
God.
Terrifying.
So embarrassing.
Someone living in your walls.
To clarify, I've never farted while reading a team beat, but other people have.
I don't know if I've ever read a team beat. I did have a subscription to Sassy. For a long time.
What was
back
Sassy?
In the day. Sassy was like 17.
Shana got 17.
Or teen. I wouldn't say it was as classy as Teen Vogue. It was more along the lines of 17. I feel like there was another teen magazine at the time too.
They competed?
Yeah. Sassy was, I had a subscription. My parents got it for me. I saved all of them. And then I took about 50 copies of it to a church retreat and then in front of all of the girls read all of the write-in stuff about like getting your periods and how to use a tampon and how to get your first kiss. I held court and like educated everyone.
You're like, just so you guys know, here's how it works.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Sassy was great. DM me if you had Sassy. Man, that magazine is definitely not around anymore.
Probably not. Probably 17 is still around though, isn't
it? Is it?
I think maybe. Teen Vogue definitely is.
Teen Vogue is, yeah.
Man.
Oh, man, magazines are a dying breed though.
That's crazy. Yeah, it is. I read like D Magazine and Texas Monthly. But
I read.
Local,
I also had for a long time, and this was just a few years ago, had a subscription to both. At the same time of Star and Us Weekly.
Oh, very nice.
Because sometimes they have the same stories, but different point of views on them. And it was very interesting
they get
to
a
compare
different
and
source.
Contrast. Yeah.
One time I just started receiving Cigar Aficionado in the mail. To this day, I don't know who sent it to me.
Did you read it?
2 years. Yeah, I would read it. What am I going to throw it out? It's a perfectly good magazine. Burt Reynolds is on the front holding a stogie. I want to know what Burt Reynolds
sexy.
Is smoking. It was kind of sexy. A lot of George Clooney, Burt Reynolds. They know their target demo.
Oh, yes.
No, I would read Cigar Aficionado.
That's good. I like it.
Just because it was free. I still, that's the great mystery of my life is who sent me those magazines.
I'm still wondering who sent me the Ouija board.
It's true.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That was a listener. I have some theories.
We'll do a mini-sode.
Yeah, well, we don't have it anymore. We got rid of it. That's right. Made somebody sign a disclaimer.
Disclaimer just said we're not responsible for any demons happens, that you summon. You get
drugged to hell.
Okay, so this is a family. There's a man, boy-ish. He's 17.
Yeah.
On the cusp of manhood, living in the walls. And then what happens?
Danny was arrested. But because of his age at the time, 17, he was initially charged as a minor. He was sent to the Department of Youth Services until October 9th, 1987, before his case was transferred to the Ayer District Court. There he was charged as an adult with 4 counts of kidnapping, 4 counts of armed assault in a dwelling, breaking and entering, larceny of greater than $100, and malicious destruction of property. He was released to his mother and stepfather after they paid $100,000 bond in anticipation of his December 11th court date.
So this became kind of a controversy in their small town, according to the old newspapers I read, because he basically was in juvie from January to October.
Yeah.
And they moved him around. He was supposed to get these psych evals. He wouldn't get them, or he would get them, and then that nothing would be done with the results. And then eventually, because he had committed the crime in one county, and so they arrested him in his home county and locked him up in the juvie in the home county. Well, then the county in which he committed the crime said, no, you know, he's ours. We want to put him here, and we're going
to extradite him back to that county.
Back to their county, and we're going to charge him as an adult. And that's when he got transferred to the Ayer District Court. But unfortunately, the judge didn't have access to any of the juvie records or any of his prior stuff. And so she said, okay, well, can you make bond and his mom and will you watch out for him? And the mom and stepdad said, sure, we'll take him home.
Not knowing the whole story.
Mm-mm. I think she just saw the counts and said, well, he's only 17, but we will charge him as an adult. But it's almost like the information from the psychologist wasn't presented.
Wow.
So the the title of the story was like, a huge mistake was made, or like bungling this situation. And basically the DAs from both areas were like, well, kind of like, who's on first? You know, we had him, but he was a juvie, and then we charged him as an adult, but the juvie records didn't get
the cracks in the system.
It sort of fell through the cracks.
Wow.
Tragic results, we'll see.
He was 100% picked this family because she snubbed him.
Correct.
Because he felt so entitled that she should not have stopped ghosting him, essentially.
Yes.
She ghosted him, so he decided he was going to ghost her.
Ghost her back.
In a much different way.
Yep.
Yeah, and just out of vindictive, malicious intent, he broke into their house and lived in the walls to torment these girls.
I've just seen recently online just varying posts from women, screenshots. There was one where a guy had matched with her on Tinder, and then she dematched him, but he had somehow gotten her Snapchat. And so she was getting these messages at 3 and 4 a.m. And it was like, you're a whore, blah, blah, blah. And when she screenshotted it, you know, she put it on Facebook, and everyone fronted him out and figured out who he was.
And it was because she just hadn't returned his
She just
match.
Unmatched him. Yeah, she didn't want to be with him.
God damn.
Then another one I just saw today, a woman was giving her number at a Dick's Sporting Goods for her, you know,
I'm always concerned about that at the cashier.
She gets home and she gets a text message that says, hey, I just wanted to let you know I'm going to shoot my shot now. I saw you at Dick's Sporting Goods. You're so hot.
No.
And I heard you put your number in, so I figured you wanted me to have it, like, haha. And she said, are you joking me? This is a huge invasion of privacy. No,
yes.
Thank you. And of course, what do you think he says? I'm so sorry. He's like, you fucking bitch.
Oh.
I'm trying to tell you you're cute. You're walking around that parking lot all by yourself. It's dangerous. Don't you know what happens in that parking lot? And he's like, why don't you just want to give me a shot? I'll walk you back to your car. And she said, I'm married. Thank you. He's like, I can't believe you married the first loser that came along. I'm like,
what?
Motherfucker, you don't know me. I've dated a lot of losers. I didn't marry the first one.
I'm married like the fifth loser that
the
I found.
Eighth one. No. So he's obviously very pissed off.
Horrible.
He gets worse and worse. And she eventually says, fuck you, leave me alone. And then it says 20 minutes later, and then in all caps it's from him going, oh my God, I can't believe you called the cops, you fucking bitch. Like,
nice.
They came to my house. And she said, yeah, I'm not, you're right. I am a bitch, and I will call the cops to your house.
Just the other day, I was
horrifying.
Somewhere where they asked for my number, and there were people in line, and I gave it to them, but I was thinking, I don't want to just say, I think it was Target.
Yeah.
I don't want to say my number out loud. That's like, you never know who could be writing that down.
Yeah.
And why do you need my number?
True.
Why does Dick's Sporting Goods need your phone number?
It's great question. So they
to
can
put you on some kind of list you don't want to be on.
So they can mail you coupons. You? Yeah, mail you coupons.
Well, guess what? You don't mail to a phone, fucking idiot. I mean, I don't even want to give you my email. But
yeah, I have a you gotta get a good fake email, like garbageidontread@gmail.com. Yeah,
and then just put all your spam there. And you know what? I might do that.
Can we have your email address? You're like GARBAGE. Wait a minute. That's garbage.
Wait a second. This sounds like spam.
But yeah, isn't that? That's
horrible. This is good for that woman for calling the cops.
Oh, I would call the cops absolutely on the first message.
Yeah.
But I think that this is, we're learning now, not learning, we knew this already from Ted Bundy and other cases, that the sense of aggressive male entitlement, ownership of a woman.
Fragile male ego.
So fragile.
Yes.
And that sense of entitlement and sense of possession, wanting possession over someone and thinking, well, if I can't be with you, you're not going to be happy at all.
Or no one else is going to have you. Yeah.
Pretty much.
It's disgusting. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what he took it to the next level when this girl said, no, thank you. I don't want to go on any more dates. He just moved in their home and pretended to be their dead mother. The most
vile.
And just this girl is at her most vulnerable. And he just preyed on that even more and enjoyed every second of it.
Took advantage.
Yeah. Well, not surprisingly, after Danny was released, the media got a hold of this bizarre case. And people started wondering who exactly was Danny LaPlante. And what had turned him into such a monster? Well, during his childhood years, Danny was tragically, psychologically, physically, and sexually abused by his father. In an early age, he was also diagnosed with dyslexia, which caused him to struggle academically. In addition, Danny struggled socially and didn't have many friends. His classmates at North Middlesex High School referred to him as creepy and weird.
Oh, so he was abused by his family, by his classmates, by... He didn't really have a break.
Everything I read used the word tortured. He was psychologically, sexually, and physically tortured by his father, which is disgusting, horrible.
Unfathomable.
Yes. No one should ever have to go through that. By no means does that make his actions excusable.
No.
But he clearly had a very traumatic and damning childhood that possibly explain some of his later actions.
Well, I think it could have a contributory effect on his later behavior.
Yes. Yeah, and then coupled with the fact that he has dyslexia, which I can't imagine the frustrations and isolation and feelings of failure that come along with it.
And also, I think now more there's a better understanding of learning disabilities and better ways for teachers to help students cope with it than maybe in the 80s. They just go, oh, that's the dumb kid.
And same for parents.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Instead of just going, oh, well, you just get bad grades. You're just slow. It's like, no, he has a learning disability. If only you give him these tools, he could thrive.
Yeah,
thrive.
I'm sure people live successfully with that all the time.
Yes. You just make it's like having anything. You say, okay.
You just know how to treat it.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Or know how to work with it.
Yeah. But he didn't have any support at home, at least from his father. In fact, it was quite the opposite of support. And then at school, he didn't have any friends. He was an outcast.
Definitely.
Which, of course, you're already at a disadvantage. And then stuff like that happens and it just
exacerbates an issue.
Yes. Danny showed signs of personality disorder and had a reluctance to care for himself in regards to his appearance and personal hygiene. School officials soon referred him to a psychiatrist in hopes of getting him much-needed help.
That's good. They're seeing that
that he needs help and they're trying to step in. The psychiatrist diagnosed him with hyperactivity disorder, which exacerbated his already troubled mental state caused by problems at home and in school. And just when things couldn't possibly get any worse, Danny's psychiatrist proceeded to sexually abuse him over the course of the next year. Once again, a male figure in Danny's life that he trusted to protect him and have his best interest at heart took advantage of his vulnerability in the worst possible way.
So this is...
This will fuck you up.
It's just piling it on.
Yes.
Layering it on.
Yeah, I can't imagine... His whole childhood is ripped away from him.
Definitely.
In the worst possible way.
And he's definitely feeling very alone.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shame, tons of violence.
Yes.
And then being outcasted at school further makes you feel alone. And then you think, oh, finally, an adult is here to help me. And that adult turns out to prey on you as well.
That's disgusting.
Horrifying.
Makes my stomach hurt.
Absolutely.
Danny also seemed to have a sick fascination with psychological mind games. Before breaking into the Andrews home, Danny would often break into various houses around his neighborhood. Once inside, he would move knickknacks and furniture around in a way that wasn't immediately obvious, but just noticeable enough to make the homeowner suspect something or question their sanity.
It's like that John Mulaney bit where he said his friend would steal something from house parties and he would say, "What do you steal?" And he goes, "Family photos, because it's the one thing they can't replace." Like, you're a monster. But doing something like that where you're like, there was a picture here, or that photo was facing that way.
Yes.
And now
it's gaslighting you.
Yeah.
There's also, I read somewhere a long time ago about a prank to pull on like a roommate is to move their bed like a quarter of an inch every night.
Like Jim did with Dwight's desk.
Yeah. So then they slowly think they're just, am I going crazy? Did I do this? Am I shrinking? What's happening here?
Or he put a nickel in the hand receiver and then eventually took him out and Dwight hit himself in the head with the phone.
Yes.
So basically Jim Halpert was just gaslighting Dwight.
Turns out.
He wrapped his desk
of ways.
And he thinks his desk is a present. And then when he sits in the chair,
that's so great. And he falls right through. Yeah. Probably the best, though, was when he thought the Secret Service was contacting him for a secret mission.
The CIA.
And he ends up on top of the roof.
Mission is canceled. Destroy phone.
Yeah, he just chunks it off the roof. There was, in fact, speculation that Danny had obtained Andy Andrews' phone number during one of these break-ins, weeks before the Andrews even knew Danny LaPlante existed. So that would explain how he got the number. He did not ask a fellow classmate for it.
He didn't
really have anybody to ask that.
And he went to a different school than her.
Yeah, he broke into their home. I guess their phone number's just lying around.
Back then you had Rolodexes.
With your own phone number?
No, he didn't break into the Andrews house. He broke into one of the houses that he was gaslighting. And they suspect that he got it. Maybe there was like a yearbook. And she
signed. I read it as he broke into their home. Yeah, so he either broke into their home or he broke into someone's home that had it. And that's, I would assume he broke into their home because...
And then he would know the address.
Even who she was.
You could see the photos on the wall, know the address.
Exactly.
Back then they had the damn the phone book. You just look anybody up.
Yeah, that's true.
Who thought that was...
We still have phone books.
Who thought that was a good idea?
Phone books? Yeah.
Seems like a terrible idea.
To have just everybody's
number. Someone wrongs you and you just look up their phone number and you just harass them?
Well, you could also call directory assistance.
You could also just stand behind somebody that digs sporting goods. Turns out.
Apparently so. Danny also had a morbid fascination with death. While on his date with Annie, Danny had learned of her mother's passing. Rather than offer his condolences, he began asking Annie intrusive and inappropriate questions, like how much her mom had suffered and how Annie felt at the exact moment her mother died. Later, Annie claimed that it felt like a plant was obsessed with the death of her mother.
Not great first date conversation.
No, and I imagine that's one big reason why she didn't want to go on a second one.
This ice cream's been great. I'm
going to
go.
I am going to leave now. Yeah.
He's clearly socially awkward as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, your average person would know not to bring something like that up or say, oh, I'm so sorry about that, and then let it go and not say, how did you feel exactly?
You would never ask upon your first meeting of someone. I would never ask those questions ever.
No.
No matter how long I knew someone, but especially after just meeting them. Well, upon his release from the juvenile facility in October, Danny went to live with his mom, stepdad, and his brother, Stephen. Almost immediately, he returned to his life of burglary. On the afternoon of October 14th, 1987, Danny broke into the home of Raymond Pindell, who lived less than a quarter of a mile from Danny's house, stole two .22-caliber Ruger handguns and their holsters, as well as a substantial amount of cash.
So this is escalating from moving knickknacks to actually not only taking stuff, but taking guns.
Guns, yes. On November 16th, 1987, between 11:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m., Danny broke into the home of Andrew and Priscilla Gustafson that they shared with their two children, Abigail, aged 7, and William, aged 5. The Gustafson's home was located about a half a mile away from Danny's house through a wooded area.
So I looked at the map, and there's houses on one side and houses on the other side, and split between is this woods with a trail running through it.
Yeah.
That's a nice little hiking trail.
Yeah.
So the houses backed up to each other. So
nice little wooded, secluded area.
Go onto the hiking trail, walk up to the house, hop in, steal something, walk out, go back to the hiking trail, go back home.
Seems like a place you would like to live normally.
I'm sure he would like to live there and offered him an escape route.
Right. Several items were stolen from them, including two cable boxes, a cordless phone, a TV remote, and some Liberty silver dollar coins. Danny took the stolen items home and asked his brother Stephen to put one of the cable boxes and the cordless phone in Stephen's tool cabinet. He gave the excuse that he did not want their parents to find them. Danny then asked his brother, as well as a friend, Michael Pulowski, for some bullets. Pulowski obliged and gave Danny a number of 22 caliber bullets.
So he stole two guns, and I don't know what he did with one of them, but the other one he accidentally left in his laundry basket.
Oopsie.
And then his stepdad found it and yelled at him, and he said, oh, I got it at a gun show. And the stepdad said, you cannot have this, and I'm going to take it from you, and took it away from
him. Unbeknownst to him, he had a second one.
But he had a second one, and then he asked the friend, hey, I'm thinking, you know, I just want to figure out how to shoot. Can you get me bullets? And I think he was like a coworker, and that's what Pulowski said. Yeah, sure, man. Here you go. I think he asked Steven as well, and Steven said, no, I'm not going to give you bullets.
Probably because he knew his brother was not in the best mental state.
Yeah, he was giving off some vibes.
Yeah. Well, heads up, things are about to get pretty graphic and upsetting. Around 3:30 p.m. on December 1st, 1987, a neighbor of the Gustafsons heard what they described as a little girl's scream. Andrew Gustafson, a young lawyer, had closed a big deal earlier in the day and wanted to celebrate with his wife. He tried calling the house three times, beginning at 3:45 p.m., to tell her to get a babysitter for the night, but got no answer. Later that day, at approximately 5:30 p.m., Andrew arrived home to find his pregnant wife, Priscilla, dead in a pool of blood on their bed. He later testified that her skin was gray. She had a pillow over her head through which someone had shot her twice at point-blank range. Police would later determine she was shot with a .22 caliber gun.
So they lived in this pretty small town. He was a small town lawyer. She was a nursery school teacher.
Yeah.
And
at a church.
And just no reason to ever expect something like this would happen.
No,
low crime area.
Both well liked, had no enemies.
No debt.
You'd never think something like this would happen.
Criminal activity. You know, he wasn't like owing money to the mob or something.
Right. Yes. And she had just a nice job, was loved by all the parents, mm-hmm. also pregnant at the time.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I don't like when I'm poked. I don't like when things are uncomfortable and I won't wear them. I'll throw them in the garbage and I'll never look back. But when I have something that is comfortable, like underwear from Skims or their bralettes, I love them and I will not throw them out. So thank you for not pinching me, Skims.
Absolutely. There's nothing worse than underwire pinching you or like just panties that are too tight. And nobody wants to feel, I don't ever want to feel my undergarments on
me. I don't
want
to think about them.
You know, I just, they're there and that's cool, but I don't want to feel them. And that's how I feel with Skims. I'm like, did I put on underwear? Yes, yeah. I did.
But I gotta double
check.
They
are so comfortable that you don't even notice that you got them on.
My lightweight cotton ruched back hipsters from Skims. I thought these are going to bunch up. They're going to be weird. Not couldn't be more comfortable again. And they're all cute and girly.
They are.
I was like, look at that. I could be adorable with a little bow on it. And I'm still not, something's not all dug in my craw.
Yeah,
so again,
my ass
thanks.
Isn't hanging out of my cotton jersey full briefs, but they're got little lace on the bottoms and a nice little bow. And so I still feel cute and sexy in them. And they're beyond comfortable.
Shocked and grief-stricken, Andrew called the police. When they arrived, they made an even more grisly discovery. Both children had been drowned in two separate bathtubs in the home. Abigail had also suffered blunt force trauma and compression of her throat. Her clothes were in disarray, and she had scratches and bruises on her body, indicating that she had fought her attacker.
So she's 7, about to turn 8. She was a couple months or a couple weeks shy of her 8th birthday.
Yes, and her brother was 5.
Mm-hmm.
Horrible.
God, I mean, for this man's whole entire life is ripped away from him.
Oh, in 30 minutes, an afternoon. Yeah. Afternoon that started so happy and celebratory, and ended in the worst day of his life.
His wife out to dinner.
Yeah.
And celebrate a deal.
Investigations uncovered semen on the bedspread beside Priscilla, as well as a used condom on the floor, indicating that she had been raped and sodomized. The semen present was from a type A secretor, meaning whoever left the semen secretes their blood type antigens into their bodily fluids, like semen, saliva, and mucus.
It's also a Golden State Killer.
Yes.
One of the indicators.
Absolutely.
That they matched. They were able to match stuff. So back then, the DNA test was more to, it wasn't until the early 90s, 94, that it really, DNA testing really took off more. Back then, it was all about blood type and if you could tell it from the fluid that was left behind.
In the bedroom closet, police found a knotted brown sock wet with saliva that they determined was used as a gag. There were also 7 pre-made ligatures in the closet, a necktie, a sock, stockings, and a pair of pantyhose, all knotted and cut to be used to tie someone up. Around the same time Andrew and the police were reconciling this horrific scene before them, Danny LaPlante was about 15 minutes away, playing with his 6-year-old niece at her birthday party.
So between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock, he commits this heinous act.
And then he goes to...
walks home.
A girl's who is just about the same age as the one he just murdered.
Yes.
Birthday party.
And sits in the floor and plays with her.
So the mental disconnect one must have to be able to do that.
Seriously.
Speaks volumes.
To turn it off and not be concerned or upset or worried or nervous or just say, oh, it's her birthday. Okay, well, let's go.
Not just upset for what you've done, but upset that... you could easily be caught.
Yes, nervous or anything.
Yeah.
No, he seems pretty...
a flat affect. Just not...
That's what they said.
No signs of remorse or any indication that he thought he did anything wrong.
Was upset.
Yeah. The next day, on December 2nd, 1987, in the woods behind the Gustafson's house, police found a gray flannel shirt and a pair of work gloves bundled and wrapped together. When they unfurled the shirt, they found the nameplate from the Gustafson home. On the gloves were presents of gunshot residue. Officers immediately got police dogs on the scent, and the dogs led them to a home about a half mile away. The scent stopped just 3 feet short of Danny LaPlante's door.
That's pretty damning.
Pretty indicative that you got the guy.
Pretty sure.
Police headed to the Townsend Public Library, where Danny was studying. They questioned him briefly, but because they did not have sufficient evidence to tie him to the murders, an arrest was not made. Later that evening, officers headed back to the LaPlante house to talk with Danny again. He spoke with them briefly on the porch, before jumping off the porch and fleeing the scene. Immediately, a manhunt ensued that included helicopters, police dogs, and nearly 50 local and state officers.
That's crazy that he just jumped off a fucking porch and ran off.
I am blown away that he could just jump off a porch and run away and he wasn't shot.
It's a pretty heavily...
Somebody didn't track him down and just tackle him?
Well, so the LaPlantes lived on this big chunk of land, and it was similar. Their house was kind of like a duplex. And it was a lot of land, and then the land went out.
Which
onto
he was
this
probably familiar with.
Very familiar
he knew
with
the ins and outs, where to hide.
And
how
if
to
it's the
evade.
Evening in the dark, he may have, you know, hopped, run around the back of the house, and by the time they're scrambling to catch up, and he's a young, you know, 17-year-old guy, he must be able to run pretty fast in theory and knows.
Caught him off guard, I guess.
They didn't think he would leap away.
No, I mean, that's very ballsy.
Yeah.
That is, yeah. Well, meanwhile, officers questioned Stephen LaPlante, Danny's brother, who confirmed that the shirt and pants they found in the woods were indeed his brother's and that Danny had been wearing that outfit the day before.
The family sort of super cooperates. Stephen super...
One might question, was that because they knew he needed to be
put away,
locked away?
Yeah. His, I mean, later on we'll get to it. His mom just straight up testified and was like, no, that's exactly the time he was gone from the house.
Yeah.
Like, they just flip completely.
I mean...
They're like, may we come inside? And Stephen LaPlante's like, oh, yeah, he hid some stuff in my cabinet. You should go look in there.
Yeah. I mean...
just, like, giving
him away. I think
they
probably are like, we love him. He's our son, our brother, but we know he needs serious help and... he's done something terribly wrong.
Yeah, he has, and they know for sure he's like burglarized people and held those people hostage.
Yeah,
with a hatchet.
They know it was no secret all the shit he did to the Andrews. So I'm sure they're like, oh my God,
finally
he's done something even more heinous. He's got to he's got to be locked up.
In another twist of horrifying fate, so Danny was released on bail in early October, and on October 9th, he was released on bail. They were scheduled to have a grand jury arraignment on October maybe 12th, I think, or something.
Yes, just a few days later.
And they just canceled it, and they can't figure out why. That was another part of that article that said this was a huge mess up. They had canceled the grand jury arraignment and didn't reschedule it. And a couple days later is when he committed the Pendel burglary, and then a couple weeks later is when he commits these horrible murders. And you just wonder, I mean,
had they been canceled?
Arraigned him and he had gone on trial and been, I mean, there's three live witnesses, maybe four, depending on what story you hear, from the Andrews attack, he could have been locked up.
Yeah.
This would have been, you know, solved.
Probably would have been. And
the timeline,
these three lives, three innocent lives.
And changed, you know, their lives forever.
Yeah, the trajectory of everybody's lives involved with this. Well, Stephen also allowed the officers to search the house. That, along with their warrant, gave them free rein of the LaPlante residence. Inside, they found the stolen items from the Pendel burglary, as well as the cable box and remote stolen from the Gustafsons. Additionally, the bullets used in the murder were a match not only to the ones given to Danny by Pawlowski, but the striations on the bullet matched the .22 caliber Ruger previously stolen from the Pendel home in October. So a lot of very damning evidence.
And the bullets were really specific. They had a letter C printed on them. And it was, so it was exactly the same.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a match. I'm sure they're mass produced, but it was very specific to that kind of gun. And then especially once you have the striations.
Yeah, I mean, all signs point to yes here.
Yes.
Still managing to evade law enforcement, Danny had made his way to the nearby town of Pepernell, about 15 minutes away. After breaking into a woman's house, he ordered her at gunpoint to drive him to Fitchburg in her van.
Her orange Volkswagen van, which is just a very... flashy
looking. Of all cars that are going to be easily spotted on the road.
Because this is the 80s.
VW bus. Yeah, it's not even the 70s anymore.
It's been around.
So it's not a usual vehicle.
They're not very fast.
No. It's probably going like 60. But it's also like if you're just told, be on the lookout for an orange VW van, there's probably only one in this town.
Especially, it's a really small area. And I was looking at it on the map, like where Pepernell is versus Townsend and all that. They're all about 15, 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
So
it'd be easy to spot. You can get the word out.
And it's a lot of woods around too. So there's really only a couple of roads.
But again, also back then, I mean, I guess they could break into a news story.
Or radio.
Yeah.
Like for cops and other towns.
I'm saying to get it out to the public.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't social media where, you know, the police can tweet, like, be on the lookout for this and stuff. So you're
at a disadvantage.
It's a little easier to evade than it would be now.
Even in an orange van.
Yeah. Well, fearing for her life, the woman obliged. Luckily, she was able to eventually jump out of the van. Undeterred, Danny continued on without her while police still frantically searched for the mass murderer.
Yeah, she saw a police cruiser and just took her shot and just jumped out and
I absolutely would do that.
Oh, same. Yeah.
Because I would be thinking, either way, I'm going to die.
I might as well
die trying.
Correct.
To not die.
Yes. That human need for survival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. It's a fight or flight. About 15 minutes south of Pepernell is a town called Ayer. Well, that's where the manhunt ended. Danny was found hiding in a dumpster in a lumber yard. He surrendered peacefully and claimed to be unarmed. When detention officers who went to book him began conducting a strip search, it was then that he admitted to hiding the .32 caliber gun in his underwear and a bullet in his sock.
So he's stolen. This is a third gun he's stolen now.
Third gun.
He had, because he broke into two houses, and then the third house he broke into was this VW van
on
woman.
His lamb from the law.
Yes, he jumps off the porch, takes off running, and just starts burgling again. He can't help himself and steals
also,
a gun.
Also, I mean, the arrogance and cockiness one must have to think, well, I'm already trying to evade police, but now I'm going to just commit even more crimes.
Fuck it.
Up the chances that I'm going to get caught.
Seriously. They said at this lumber yard, there was a dumpster and it had a little door on the side, and the cop walked around, saw this little door and just thought, I'm going to stick my head in there because it was a trash compactor dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like mechanical and it had a mechanical hydraulic lift. So the cop opens the little door, looks up and he sees a pair of feet in a plaid shirt dangling. And he says, of course, draws his weapon and says,
yeah,
it's over. yeah. Danny, you got to come down. This again. So things you read in 1987 edition of a local newspaper
of the Lowell Sun.
Apparently, the two detectives that got him said to themselves when they got the APB that there was a manhunt. They said, "We're going to be the ones to get him."
Well, and they chaos magic it.
Dude, they did.
Even back then, they didn't even know what it was.
Just
they
believe
did
in yourself.
You got to always.
And then apparently, he stuffed a gun in his pants.
Yeah, there's a joke there, but there I decided not yeah, to make yeah, it yeah, because yeah. of the circumstances.
It's pretty horrifying, but that's why they strip search people in jail.
So when they patted him down while arresting him, they missed that.
Maybe they didn't grab his ween area. I don't know how
I thought that's what a pat down was.
The TSA, they kind of dance around it.
When I went to Lake Tahoe and I was pregnant, I talked about being there on the last episode. At the airport, I refused to go through the x-ray machine because I was pregnant. Even though I was looking stuff up, I mean, there were arguments for both sides, but I was like, why risk it? So I had to stand there and wait for them to come get a female security guard to pat me down. And she was like, do you want to go in another room to do this? I'd never been patted down. So I said, no, it's fine here. She should have taken me to dinner first because that was very intimate.
She got in the crack?
And dude, front and back. And Tommy's
like, she's already pregnant. What are you trying to do?
Tommy was standing there and afterwards he was just laughing because every time she would get near like my boobies or my bathing suit area and she had to do a swipe, she would just be like, so how's the weather outside? Like try to make small talk to distract from the fact. She was like just totally groping me.
She's like, whoop. Yeah. And you're like, why did you just pinch my nipples? There's not dinks could be hiding there.
You never know what you could hide.
You could be a fembot and
that's true.
I have to know.
And a pregnant fembot.
Man.
Yeah, it's quite an ordeal.
That's a hard thing.
I almost missed my flight, to be honest, because of how long it took for them to get a security guard to come pat me down.
You're like, why are you standing behind me with your arms around me?
Yeah.
Why is Enrique Iglesias on the radio? Yeah. But that's a hard question, though, if you say, you know, it could be harmful.
Yeah. Why
I don't want to go through it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I had an 18-year-old TSA guy try to mansplain to me that it wouldn't hurt the baby. Let me tell you something. Christy doesn't respond well to stuff like that.
Nope.
And I damn near caused a scene in the middle of DFW airport. He was such a
You're
little
You're like,
cocksucker.
I'm about to blow up at you. And they're like, she said it. Take her out. Don't make those jokes.
I could go off like a bomb right now. Yes. Yeah, don't ever make those
My
jokes.
My emotions are explosive. You have no idea. You could be like the lady in front of me one time that apparently now you got to take food out of your bags.
Oh, yeah.
And she didn't know that.
Like what? Chips?
Anything. If you have any snack, you got to take it out of your bag.
Did not know that.
And I didn't have any snacks on me, but she apparently had a gallon Ziploc bag of shrimp scampi. And they went through.
What?
It went through.
Who does that?
Great question. And it went through the machine. And of course, they unzip it because they're like, is this a
oh my God,
bag of worms?
Just unleashed the fucking and stench.
They just open it and they say, is this your snack? And she's like, that's not a snack. That's my scampi. She was real country. That's my scampi.
It's not a snack, it's her entree.
I don't know.
What is she trying to say? Did she bring enough for everyone?
It's my scampi. Also, it means it's room temperature.
Yeah. Who?
And your
clothes. Don't eat room temperature scampi.
It's just good advice. And now your drawers and all your whatnots are going to smell like scampi.
Wow. She was taking that to somebody. She's like, I'll tell you what. I'm coming.
It's my scampi.
I'm coming and I'm bringing my scampi. I'm bringing my prize winning scampi. But. Louise, how are you going to get it here? Don't you worry about that.
Mm-mm.
I'm getting my scamps.
It ain't
on this
a liquid.
Plane.
It's more of a kind of a gel.
It's a gelatinous
goo.
Did I
tell you my mom got stopped at TSA coming to Chicago? Because she brought me a coffee maker and she was being nice and she was bringing me a bag of coffee grounds and she also wanted to bring me powdered creamer so I wouldn't have to buy creamer at the store. So she filled a sandwich bag with coffee grounds.
Uh-oh.
And then she filled, no, opposite. She filled a sandwich bag of coffee creamer.
So it looks like cocaine.
And it's, yep. And she filled a gallon Ziploc bag with coffee grounds and to save space, she stuck the coffee creamer Ziploc bag into the coffee ground Ziploc
so,
bag.
So she's hiding cocaine.
100%. And they, of course, pull it out of her bag and go, what is this? And she's like, what?
It's like, creamer.
What is this? And she's like, I'm taking coffee to my daughter. Then it's creamer inside. I don't want to have to buy creamer. It's creamer. It's French vanilla. It's creamer. And they're like, just go, ma'am. You can just leave.
See, she could have been a drug mule
easily.
They were like, we're not going to put up with this. We're not going to deal with this. We don't have time.
If you're aggressive enough, you can absolutely traffic drugs.
Yeah, I have to be willing. That.
What was in that scampi bag? Now it's probably a balloon of black tar heroin.
And they're like, just go.
Give me my scampi.
Anybody that takes shrimp scampi on a plane should be
banned from flying permanently.
And thrown in prison on the top of a mountain.
Can you imagine if the pressure changes, the scampi
just explodes
in the upper compartment? It's just raining scampi.
Oh my God.
This airplane has to be decommissioned.
Yeah. No, you put it down like a horse.
God.
You can't fly that thing anymore after that.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I don't like when I'm poked. I don't like when things are uncomfortable and I won't wear them. I'll throw them in the garbage and I'll never look back. But when I have something that is comfortable, like underwear from Skims or their bralettes, I love them and I will not throw them out. So thank you for not pinching me, Skims.
Absolutely. There's nothing worse than underwire pinching you or like just panties that are too tight, and nobody wants to feel. I don't ever want to feel my undergarments on.
Yeah, I don't want to think about them.
You know, I just they're there and that's cool, but I don't want to feel them. And that's how I feel with Skims. I'm like, did I put on underwear? Yes, yeah. I did.
But
they are so comfortable that you don't even notice that you got them on.
My lightweight cotton ruched back hipsters from Skims. I thought these are going to bunch up. They're going to be weird. Not couldn't be more comfortable again. And they're all cute and girly.
I
was like, look at that. I could be adorable with a little bow on it. And I'm still not. Something's not all dug in my craw.
Yeah,
so, again,
my ass
thanks.
Isn't hanging out of my cotton jersey full briefs. But they're got little lace on the bottoms and a little bow. And so I still feel cute and sexy in them. And they're beyond comfortable.
My God.
My scampi.
Everywhere those people are going.
I need
just
it.
Smell like a rotten vagina.
Jesus.
You know I'm right, though.
Like the dumpster behind a Long John Silver's. Oh, man.
Well, he was found kind of in a dumpster.
He was.
Trash compactor.
Yeah, a trash compacting dumpster situation.
And after he was found, he was once again arrested and this time charged with 3 counts of murder. He pled not guilty.
Well, that's what they usually do, is they go to trial.
Throughout the 3-week trial, 18-year-old Danny never showed emotion or remorse. Danny's attorney argued that there were no witnesses to the crime, and therefore the state's case was all circumstantial. However, the state presented mounds of evidence, including a key piece, a strand of Abigail's hair, found on one of Danny's socks.
This case was very unusual at the time because it was so strong with fiber, small DNA evidence. Mm-hmm. So it's like the strand of hair from Abigail. There were fibers on
his semen.
There's fibers on the bedspread that were also on his clothes that were also similar to the sock fibers and that were found in Priscilla's mouth.
Yeah.
So they were able to match really excellent work on behalf of the crime scene technicians, really combing through tiny fibers and pieces of evidence.
And making it very hard to explain how all of this would be on his clothing had he not been there.
Correct.
Well, laboratory analysis of Danny's blood was also introduced, which revealed that he was a type A secretor, a match to the semen found on the bedspread. The prosecution was also allowed to introduce the cordless phone and cable box stolen from the Gustafsons 2 weeks before the murders. Police found those items inside LaPlante's home. Further adding to his guilt, Danny LaPlante, in fact, confessed to the murders in a series of letters in 1987 and 1988 that the state also admitted into evidence. An inmate named Larry Brocklebank began writing Danny, asking for information and gathering the letters in a plot to obtain more favorable treatment in jail.
So I found this newspaper article about old Brocklebank. First of all, there's a state trooper named Steve Lawless, which is just fucking cool.
Yeah.
And he believed that the letters from Danny to Brocklebank were legit because Brocklebank had this scheme in his head that he would get reduced charges if he was able to come up with evidence. So he would see high profile cases, and he did it with
not a bad idea.
Dude, he did it with two inmates in Florida, and then he did it, and he was in the Salem jail, which was across the state kind of from Townsend, but saw this in the newspaper and decided, you know what, I'm going to write to Danny LaPlante and say, hey, buddy, I'm in jail too. I know what it's like. Do you want to talk to my lawyer?
Yeah.
Do you need help?
Trying to offer a olive leaf.
Pretty much, and trying to say, I'm here for you, I get it, you know, let me help you.
Yeah. Well, the initial letters show Danny's confidence, with him saying,
they have no gun yet, and will never find it. I was alone.
Apparently, in later letters, Danny said,
I'm worried after killing three people, and more charges from before.
However, after Brocklebank went to the authorities with the first few letters and offered to keep the conversation going, he became an agent acting on behalf of the government. In that case, since Danny did not know Brocklebank was an agent, Danny's rights were violated. But the letters from before the agreement were admissible at trial.
So there was a huge motion to suppress hearing that was also reported in the Lowell Sun about whether or not these letters were admissible. And the question was, should Danny have been made aware that, in theory, this Brocklebank fellow is working on behalf of the police? And so the judge ruled that because he freely was admitting a lot of shit in the upfront letters. He also, there's another one. He said, I don't know if your lawyer can help me. I've been charged with three murders that I did, and I'll probably get charged with rape too because of what I did, and sort of was diarrheating of the mouth. Yes. Happily writing that all of the ones from before Brocklebank went to the authorities, which were plenty, was admissible.
So they didn't even need the ones.
Yeah.
After
there was just so many
working for the government.
Yeah. There were so many.
Well, in addition to the letters, the defense asked for some other key items to be excluded, including the loot stolen from the other houses Danny burglarized. This was key, as the gun used in the Gustafson murder was stolen from Raymond Pendell's house nearby. Police later found that gun in an abandoned Jeep on the LaPlante's property. Defense filed a motion to suppress this evidence, but it was denied.
So they did the police had a warrant to search the LaPlante residence, and one of the things that Danny LaPlante's appellate attorney argued on appeal was that the police exceeded the scope of their warrant. So right. When you have a warrant to search a place, you're allowed to search the place. You know, if they say you can search storefront 132 of this strip mall, you don't get to go and search every other little storefront. Right. But the argument would be then if this warrant said you can search the ABC strip mall, then you would theoretically be able to search all the malls, cubbies.
So this said
the LaPlante residence. Well, the argument from Danny's attorney was it was really a duplex. And they kind of let Steven chill in one of the parts of it, and that's where the tool cabinet was and some of the stuff. And then their land sort of went pretty far back, and that's where the Jeep was. But where the appellate court came down on it was that, from all appearances, when you walk up and the cops did as much diligence as they could and said, hey, do you know who, you know, calls the cable company or calls the electric company, says who lives at 123? It was like 22 West Elm. They said, oh, the LaPlante family. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say, oh, the LaPlantes and the Smiths, and they share it. They just assumed, even though it was a duplex, they were They were sufficiently occupying the entire structure as to create as to have it all be considered the same residence and the same with the area around it. So basically the trial,
because the Jeep was on the property, his attorney said this is out of the scope of where you should be searching, therefore it shouldn't be admissible, but they said
so sad. They also said, hey, we asked your brother, yo dude, is it cool if we look back here?
And he was like yeah, hey,
right on brother.
Yeah.
And gave him pretty much everything.
Right.
He was volunteering a lot of stuff. You may want to check the tool cabinet. Hey, that's the shirt my brother was wearing.
I'm telling you, I think that they were trying to help him, help themselves, help
just
society.
Get him where he needs to be.
The prosecution produced no eyewitnesses, but relied on its scientific evidence, like the secretor type and several fibers from the Gustafson home that were also on LaPlante's clothes. four members of LaPlante's family testified that he was also not home between 3 to 5 p.m. on the day of the murders. This contradicted Danny's claim that he had been home all day.
Yeah, he said he was home all day watching music videos.
You know what? Good for this family.
Dude, his mom
for
said...
not trying to cover this up.
The mom said when she got on the stand, the prosecutor said, you understand you're under oath and you understand you cannot lie. And she said, okay. And so afterwards, when she was interviewed, they said, why did you say that stuff about your son? And she said, well, the prosecutor said I had to tell
good
the truth.
Good for her.
So I told the truth.
Yeah. The jury deliberated for 5 hours over 2 days before finding Daniel LaPlante guilty on all three counts of first-degree murder. During sentencing, Judge Barton told the defendant,
some people say you should receive the same sentence you imposed on the Gustafsons, death by ligatures and hanging, but we don't have a death penalty in Massachusetts.
Instead, the judge sentenced Danny to 3 consecutive life sentences without parole. In November of 1993, the state's highest court upheld LaPlante's convictions. Andrew Gustafson was too bereaved to comment on the verdict, but Priscilla's sister said,
we're glad Danny LaPlante's gone from this world for good, but life is unfair. 4 people were killed.
Her other sister added,
there couldn't be justice.
And that is very true.
It's true. Even if he goes to jail, even if he had the death penalty, it's not going to ever bring back those 4 souls.
No, that's a hurt that no matter what the outcome of his trial or anything, it's not going to matter to them.
Mm-mm.
They just want their family members back. Well, Danny is currently rotting in jail, but nevertheless manages to be a gross monster.
No editorializing here.
In 2004, Danny's civil attorneys were awarded about $100,000 in attorney's fees against the Board of Prisons for violating Danny's civil rights. Danny claims he was denied access to the prison law library after being put in solitary due to fears for his own safety. He also complained that he had his pornography taken away, and that violated his First Amendment rights. Prison policy permits commercial erotica.
They were taking it away from him.
Danny got $450 compensation while his attorneys earned $100,000 in fees.
Man.
That's just, he's just doing it to
be an ass.
Yeah, to give a big middle finger. Got nothing else to do. LaPlante also filed a suit against the Massachusetts Department of Correction after claiming his freedom to practice Wicca was infringed upon after being denied colored pins, carrot cake, and dragon blood, a ritual oil.
If practicing Wicca has colored pins and carrot cake,
sign me up, man.
I'm in.
I had a good friend that practiced Wicca.
I think he's making this up.
That they need this stuff?
Yeah, I think hot take, Danny LaPlante's lying to get cake.
And you know what? I don't know much about it, so I don't know what the cake is about. But according to court documents, LaPlante said the cake would, quote, excite the senses and that it had to be carrot cake or wolf ice, as he claims the Wiccans call it. He also claimed that while he needed carrot cake for January, he would need a chocolate cake in February.
That's just a cake of the month club.
I think he just, maybe his birthday was in February. He's like, I want a chocolate cake for my birthday. Now, again, I don't know much about Wicca. Maybe you guys need cakes. I'm sure we have some Wiccan listeners that could educate us. I don't know why you need cakes.
If we ask for DMs, they're just going to go, no, that is incorrect. Danny LaPlante made this up.
I honestly do not know, but I don't want to say that he made it up in case they do something with cakes.
And I don't, then, you know what?
Cake I don't want to shit on anybody's religion or what you're doing with cakes.
I'm into it, especially if there's cake.
Hey, any religion that involves cakes of the month, sign me up right now, please.
Right in line.
Upon hearing of his lawsuit, pagans from around the globe came forward to say that he did not need these items to practice the faith and that they refused to accept him as one of their own.
I think maybe he was trying to take advantage of a lesser known religion in
that
order
doesn't
to
sound like him
to benefit himself.
In March of 2019, Merritt Schnipper, attorney for LaPlante, filed for an appeal citing that his client's current sentence is in conflict with a 2014 state-adopted law, which says defendants convicted of a murder as juveniles should be given a meaningful opportunity to re-engage with society, and that the longest term that juveniles convicted of first-degree murder must serve before going before the parole board is 30 years.
The thing about this is it's not a retroactive statute.
Right. Schnipper called for a resentencing that would make Danny eligible for parole after 30 to 35 years, offering LaPlante a chance to make a case for release immediately or within a few years. Prosecutor Crystal Lyons urged the court to reject any change in LaPlante's sentence, citing the brutality of the crimes. It was also noted that the law isn't retroactive, and in cases like LaPlante's, in which multiple crimes occurred, Nothing prohibits judges from ordering consecutive sentences that push parole eligibility dates out further.
Yeah, this is not a case of he's been wronged or he was some kid that was wrongfully... I mean, he was a cold-blooded killer.
Sure.
On months away from his 18th birthday.
Right.
At best, that would be a technicality.
In June of 2019, the Massachusetts Supreme Court unanimously upheld the Plant sentence, meaning he must serve 45 years of his three consecutive life sentences before being offered the possibility of parole. This ruling means Danny will be behind bars until he is at least 62 years old.
A psychiatrist that was brought in to talk with him and see if he had maybe been rehabilitated said, no, he has not been and he's still a danger to society.
At his appeal sentence or his appeal trial, he made a very public apology and said he was remorseful and thought every day about how he wished he could take back what he did. And most people were like, this is a load of bullshit.
It's one of those things where I, especially having an expert examine him and say, no, he doesn't really have remorse and he is still a danger to others. He's had however many years he's been in jail to watch videos or think about how would a person who sounds like they're sorry sound in order to sound at the appellate hearing to sound
somewhat. He has nothing to think about except how to get out of where he is.
Exactly.
District Attorney Tom Riley, who is now in private practice, put it bluntly. He said Danny destroyed a family and will never be rehabilitated.
He is extremely dangerous and he should never get out.
Riley said in 2007, echoing what he said at Danny's sentencing hearing 20 years previously,
Danny is such a danger, he must die in prison.
Well, there's a good chance he will.
It worked out for Tom Riley. He was the DA at the time. Well, he was an assistant DA at the time, prosecutor at the time. And then after this case, it kind of jump-started his career. Ran for DA, got elected the Middlesex County DA or whatever. And now I think he's a partner at a big firm. But yeah, he should die in prison.
So what do we think?
He should die in prison.
He should die in prison. Yeah. Yes, I agree. He should never get out. The Gustafsons, Andrew Gustafson passed away in 2014, but Priscilla's sisters and other family members have all come forward to say he should never be released. We want him to die in prison.
And it was so... It's such a heinous crime and senseless and violent.
And completely he had no connection or tie. There was no motive. It was simple evil. He just escalated from, and many said because he had the guns that the only reason he went through with this is that he wasn't brave enough or didn't have the confidence to do it without some sort of armed weapon. Mm-hmm. So once he got these guns,
he felt powerful.
Yes. Then he escalated, but he escalated so quickly.
Yeah.
Which is also very scary to think if he hadn't been caught, what he was capable of next.
Just doing fairly simple burglaries, of course, terrorizing the family. The Andrews family was pretty telling of his capabilities. That's lying in wait and planning and doing things. And holding a family hostage. But yeah, escalating that quickly to a triple murder and sexual assault is...
So he was never... He never went to trial for that.
Correct. He spent 10 months in juvie waiting.
But because this happened while his trial was upcoming...
Yes.
Does that just mean that crime, because it's such a lesser crime, they just throw away?
They just didn't charge him. I mean, he was charged. They just didn't do the trial, I wouldn't think.
Interesting.
Because at some point you're in jail for a million years.
Yeah, I'm just thinking from that family's point of view, like, they don't really get closure.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure they're also like, Thank God, at least this wasn't us. Yeah, we got off easy.
They would be relieved that it wasn't them. Absolutely. Although, and also probably survivor's guilt and think, how easily, or what if he had killed us? And then that family would have been saved because he would have been arrested or he would have gone to jail sooner. So, I mean, it was like I said, it kind of rocked the small town as far as he shouldn't have even been out.
Right.
Psych record said he was a danger. He was violent. He had these tendencies. And also just, to me, saying, okay, this kid's only 17, he doesn't know what he did. It's like, no, he was in their home
for months,
stalking them, threatening them, and then tying them up. That indicates a level of behavior so far beyond the norm that he definitely at least needs to be kept for further evaluation, if not just until trial.
Where did his family think he was all that time?
I don't know that he maybe lived there 24/7.
You think he just came and went?
Yeah, because he got so good at burglary. I would think he, and it's in the basement. You know, if there's a window or something, you kind of slip in and out of the basement. So
he might spend the night there, spend some time there, but he was going home at night and just coming in and out. Wow.
Yeah, I don't think he 24/7 lived there. Because there would just be like tons of fecal matter and he had to change clothes.
Yeah, and he would have had to eat and stuff like
that. And go to school and whatnot.
Well,
I think
he is a monster.
Terrible.
Hope he never gets out. And my God, what a terrible thing for both these families to go through, but especially the Gustafsons. That is a nightmare that I never want to imagine.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, back then, like I said, they lived in a small town, no enemies, no...
You would never think... People move to small towns, so things like this don't happen.
That's exactly what happened. It's crazy.
Well, let us know what you guys think. It's a doozy, so takes a lot of twists and turns.
Definitely.
I'd heard of this story from listener suggestions. I did not know it ended with these murders.
Correct.
I thought it was just the crazy stuff that happened in the Andrews house.
At Spencer's mom on Instagram asked us to do this.
Oh,
Shout out. Thank you. And I just very initially, briefly looked at the Andrews family thing and didn't scroll down and see. And then he also went on to be a heinous killer.
This happened, yeah.
So that, you know, I mean, that takes it from just a interesting, almost
a creepy, bizarre thing,
urban legend to
something a nightmare, more sinister and real.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. What's her name again?
At Spencer's mom.
At Spencer's mom for the suggestion. We have some very fun and exciting appearances coming up.
I'm so excited.
We're very excited. On August 1st, you can catch us alongside some other awesome podcast hosts on the Badass Ladies Behind the Mic podcast panel on Thursday, August 1st from 6 to 8 p.m. in Dallas.
We are also thrilled to announce that on August 22nd at Interabang Books in Dallas, we have the honor of interviewing the acclaimed true crime writer and co-host of the podcast Murder Squad, Billy Jensen, about his new book, Chase Darkness With Me. We would love to see you guys there, and we have more details on that event to come.
Yes, information on both of these events are at sinisterhood.com/links.
We can't wait.
We are super excited. Also, Billy Jensen is a huge Love Island fan.
Oh, God.
And we've already discussed how we're going to talk about Love Island, so I'm very, very excited.
It's going to be awesome.
It's everything I love under one roof.
Except can't wait.
Ella won't be there, so
but
almost everything I
almost.
Love.
You can bring a photo of Ella, and it's almost everything.
Oh, that's good. I've always got a photo with her. She's, oh, my God, I've got... There's got to be upwards of 10,000 photos of her on my phone at this point. Well, many of you have asked if we have a Patreon where you can donate to the show. We do. Our show will always remain free, but if you wish to donate to help offset the cost of making and hosting the show, you can visit sinisterhood.com and click on Patreon in the top right corner. You can get some sweet perks like Patreon-exclusive content, a Sinisterhood sticker, membership to our exclusive Patreon Facebook group, a special shout-out on the show, and a monthly bonus mini-sode. And make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
So many of you have been tagging us in pics of you sporting your sweet Sinisterhood merch. Please, don't stop. If you want to get some cool Sinisterhood swag like t-shirts, mugs, totes, and even clothes for your kiddos, visit sinisterhood.com and click on shop in the top right corner. Also, my dream came true, and we finally got photos of dogs.
Several.
Onesies.
Kibbles, shih tzus.
Keep them
coming. We love it so much. Also, send us pics of your babies in these, too, or your kiddos. Well, the best thing you can do to help us grow is like, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and tell a friend who you think would like us to check us out. It means so much to us and really helps small podcasts like us get more exposure.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at SinisterhoodPod and like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Christy, where are you at on the computer?
I am on Twitter at Christy or GTFO and on Instagram at Christy M. Wallace. Heather, what about you?
I'm on Instagram at Heather VS The World and on Twitter at MCK VS The World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Thanks so much for sticking around and for supporting the show. Here are your Patreon shoutouts: Samantha Enrizi,
Mia,
Lydia Hackenberg,
Regan Janae Kasten,
Carrie Cowling,
Samantha Wertheimer,
Tyler Brown,
Allison Brown,
Ashley Shannon,
and Freshie Lawrence. Thank you so much, guys, for supporting the show. We appreciate it so much.
And keep your eye out for your Sinisterhood stickers in the mail.
Keep it creepy.
Sinister.